Succession number 10667, Reel 3.
Wing Commander Davits, Reel 3.
After the roadblock episode, the Japanese, in fact, did not hold on to the roadblock, so we didn't have to force our way through it, but they went ahead to the west and then came round behind us and took Rangoon in our rear. I'm going to read now, just for your interest, I've taken this out of Bill Slim, General Slim's book, and his reasons for this extraordinary release of the whole of the Burma army is such. General Alexander had escaped from Rangoon by sheer luck. The whole British force from Rangoon, with its General Alexander and headquarters, would have been destroyed had it not been for the typical rigid adherence to the letter of his orders by the Japanese divisional commander. He, being instructed to use the native paths in the jungle by bypass the city to the north and swing round to attack it from the west. They had unknowingly completely bottled up the British forces. All the Japs had to do was keep the roadblock in place, and with his troops and air force could have wiped out the whole five-mile column stretched out along the Burma Road. And I think that is a very good description of what happened, but it did happen. Well, after this, I was sent off up to Prome and then on to Magwe, where we then became Burr Wing. And I was number two in Burr Wing to Group Captain Seton Brawl. Very charming person indeed, and one I'd known before the war. We stayed here until we were completely bombed out by the Japanese, who on three occasions bombed us in 30-35 hours and cleared the whole place. So then we had to move up what I'm going to say is I'm not going much further onto this. On further up the road, until on the 8th of May, I eventually got out with the Burr Wing troops at Michener.
Can I ask you, in relation to the Burma campaign as it developed later on, whether you had anything to do with the two famous Chindit operations of dropping troops behind the Japanese lines?
Well, I did, actually, because I was a member then of 2-to-1 group at Imphal, and I was given command of 189 wing of fighters, and as wing commander then, I wasn't supposed to fly over much, although I did to a certain extent, and I had to take command also, apart from Silchar, where it was, Pathakandi. To Pathakandi, an aerodrome about 50 miles south of Silchar, and the CO there was a chap called Colonel Cochrane, who was, and all the troops were known as Cochrane's young ladies, and they had aircraft there and Dakotas and gliders, which all went over into Burma to Wingate's troops over in the centre of Burma. I met Wingate. In fact, I was with him on the very night that he was killed in Imphal when he came in, and he wanted very bad weather, and the pilot who was going to take him out again refused to fly, and quite rightly so too, because the weather was so bad. And he said, if the British won't take him, then the Americans will. The Americans did, and he was dead within an hour. Hank, turn him off, will you? The official report says Wingate, flying from Imphal to his new headquarters at Lalakat near Sylhet in the Surma Valley in a Mitchell bomber, crashed by night in a wild tangle of hills west of Imphal. He and all the crew were instantly killed. The cause of the accident cannot be definitely stated. The wreckage was eventually found on the reverse side of the hills, so it was unlikely that the aircraft had flown into the hills. The most probable explanation is it suddenly entered one of those local storms found in this area of extreme turbulence. They are difficult to miss at night, and once in them, an aeroplane can be flung out of control or even have its wings torn off. Now, that is a report of the actual death of Wingate.
What did you feel about Wingate himself as a man?
Well, if I say, I don't think I can say it, because everybody really consider him mad. And I think in many ways he was. He was brilliant one minute and ruthless the next. And I think he was a wonderful man himself. There's no two ways about that. And he wasn't frightened of anything. And I think that's about all I can say about him.
How often did you meet him?
Oh, I suppose in all about six times, I suppose.
Was it officially or informally?
Oh, well, it could have been informally, because when he was getting ready to go, I used to pop round and see some of the troops there and so on who were going out, you see. So, I mean, he was there.
Was he an eccentric character?
I would have thought so, yes. I would have thought so.
Did you have much to do with the American Air Force yourself?
No, I didn't. I don't think I did at all, except with Colonel Cochrane, actually, down at Pathakandi. No, I didn't, actually, no, not at all.
Can you tell me about your contact with Winston Churchill after the Second World War?
Yes, I was very honoured. I had a letter one morning in 1948... inviting me to take command of his auxiliary squadron, number 615, County of Surrey Squadron, which were then being formed at Biggin Hill. And at the same post, I had a letter from the Air Council asking me whether I'd be prepared to do so. And I just couldn't resist it. I resisted. I hadn't flown for 3 years now then, by that time. And although I'd had a private aeroplane of my own, a little Austar I used to pop around in and do business with and so on, but I hadn't really flown any service aircraft for 3 years. And I took command of the squadron, and of course I met Winston Churchill on very many occasions, both at Chartwell and at Biggin Hill. And what a wonderful man he was. And that's about all I can say about him, actually. But the final thing I'd like to say is, because we were a certain deficiency flying with the Auxiliary Air Force, I was asked to lead the main flypast in front of King George VI in 1951. Was it 1950? And which I did with 8 squadrons at Farnborough. And I had to have this number of aircraft flying past the saluting base at 5:15 precisely. And I'm very glad to say I did it both on the Friday and on the Saturday. This, I think, really is the end of my flying career now.